Welcome inside the Radio Octagon. This is Saskatchewan's number one sports talk show, The Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
Hello and good afternoon, Saskatchewan. I'm Ryan McNally and hosting The Sports Cage for you on a Tuesday afternoon. Today's Sports Cage brought to you by Saskatchewan Lotteries. Bringing communities together, Saskatchewan Lottery products fund over 12,000 sports, culture, and recreation groups across Saskatchewan. We have an absolutely jam-packed show for you today. Going to be talking a little bit of Wolseley Craft Hockeyville bid a little later on in Hour 1. We'll also have Benny Walchuk's SJHL report. Sportsnet's Arash Madani will join us on the show a little later on for Coast to Coast, brought to you by Smart Investing Solutions. Be smart with your money. Call Brian Gawley at Smart Investing Solutions, 546-2533. Riders General Manager Jeremy O'Day going to join us in Hour 2 as well. And Glenn Suter going to help us wrap up the show as well. But first things first, let's head out to the Western Pizza Hotline to chat with Lexi Adamson. She's the chair of the Kindersley Curling Committee that is going to be bringing not one, but two provincial championships to Kindersley next year with the Sastel Tankard and the Viterra Scotties playdowns at the exact same time, at the exact same venue. Lexi, how's it going here today?
Very good. Thanks for having me.
Hey, glad to have you on, Lexi. I understand there's a pretty big hockey game going on tonight that's keeping you busy.
Sure is. Flin Flon's in town to play our Kindersley Clippers, game 3. Flin Flon's got 2 on us, so it's a big night tonight.
And I imagine that barn is going to be absolutely packed to the gills, I imagine.
Absolutely. Hopefully standing room only and lots of noise.
Switching gears a little bit to the Provincial Scotties and the Sastel Tankard coming up next year. This has to be pretty special to welcome both of those events to Kindersley.
Oh, we're so excited. Obviously, an event of this caliber, there's been a couple months of planning gone by, and that was all, you know, done behind closed doors. So we're really, really excited to have the announcement made, and we look forward to next January.
What have you heard from the community on this announcement since this news broke?
Oh, everybody is so excited. You don't have to be a curling fan to realize when a large event like this comes to your community, it's huge for businesses, it's huge for hospitality, it's huge for our youth to have something to look up at, and it's something that our facility can do and handle, and that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how confident are you that the West Central Event Center is going to be able to accommodate double the athletes, potentially more than double the curling fans, thanks to this new setup?
Absolutely. Well, we're really excited. We have new seating that's gone into the West Central side of our facility, and the rest of that will be finished this summer, as well as some other work kind of on the ice plant side. So we're really excited that an event like this can help get some of that done and have a beautiful facility to host not only the curlers, but the fans for this event.
And we did mention this a little bit earlier on. This is going to be the first time the women's and men's events will be happening simultaneously in the same venue, on the same ice, at the same time. It's exciting knowing your community is going to be offering up a first in provincial sports history when it comes to the curling side of things, isn't it?
Exactly. We're so excited. So 24 teams, you're going to have 12 men's team on the Sastel side and 12 teams on the Viterra side, and they will all be playing at the same time, as you said, over probably a 7-day span. Kind of those details still have to be ironed out, but yeah, all 24 teams at the same time.
And we've seen events held in the same venue just on separate dates, right? We've never seen them the exact same time. Have you drawn from communities like Melville, who did that in 2020, or even Estevan that did that last year, for kind of like what a crash course of what to expect could be like?
Absolutely. A huge shout out to all the communities. Everybody is so helpful, especially in the curling community. I've got to talk to the Tisdale hosting committee from last year, as well as Saskatoon Nutana. They had the men's and Tisdale had the women's this year, and everybody's been so awesome. We did talk to Esteban as well, and there's a lot of people with a lot of great ideas, and so we'll pull from those and keep growing as we put it into one event together.
Lexi Adamson, the host chair for the Kindersley Provincials coming up next year. It'll be the Viterra Scotties, the Sastel Tankard happening at the same time. And she's on that Western Pizza Hotline. Perfect pizza for with a generous amount of toppings, plus Greek food like souvlaki, ribs, salads, all the goodness you can't make at home. Call Western Pizza today. Lexi, remind us, has Kindersley hosted either of these events before?
Sure have. They've done both of them throughout the years. The most recent time was the Men's Tankard in 2016.
And how did that event go?
Really good. Our community really gets behind any sporting event, but we have an amazing curling club here, and our youth program has just absolutely sprouted in the last year. So we've got a lot of very excited young curlers to be a part of this as future stars and be in the stands and watch what these curlers can do, so they have something to look up to.
This is going to be a great way to show off Kindersley as a community too, isn't it? Because I imagine there's going to be a ton of people coming to this event.
You're exactly right. And no event like this can be put on without the community. So a huge thanks to the town of Kindersley, all the businesses that are going to help us, whether it's volunteer time, sponsorship, setup, takedown. It's going to take the whole, West Central area, really.
Do you feel the community is ready to host a double event like this, though?
Absolutely. Yeah, they're so excited. In the early stages of planning this, I had talked to all of our minor sports boards to give them a heads up that this will be coming into the facility, and there was nothing but excitement from each of those conversations I had. So yeah, it'll be great.
Lexi, obviously the Kindersley Clippers Junior A program up there is a huge draw, but is the hope that this event could attract bigger and better things for Kindersley and area?
Yes, for sure. Absolutely. I can't wait for everybody to come see how amazing our community is and what we can do for hospitality and bring people that haven't been here before to our town.
Curling, obviously huge across the province. Maybe give us a sense of how big this is in Kindersley.
As a curling fan, it's like going to a grand slam. You'd love to go to an event and see the men and women at the same time. So I think that's going to be just such a huge draw and more travel, more worth your time, I guess, to travel to and be able to see both at the same time.
And Lexi, I guess, what's the curling community like in Kindersley? I imagine the curling rink's full on a night-to-night basis.
It really is. We have a great club. So we've got about 3 nights a week of league play, and then we've got 1 or 2 nights, depending on the time of year, for our youth league. So there's very few evenings that you'll see our curling club empty, and lots of different bond spiels and fun spiels on the weekends. So we have a very excited club and a growing club that will be behind this event the whole time.
Awesome stuff, Lexi. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us here on the Sports Cage.
Thank you very much for having me and helping us spread the awareness on this great event.
Alrighty, that was Lexi Adamson, the host chair of the Kindersley Provincial Scotties and Sastel Tankard, coming to Kindersley next year. When we come back, we will hear from Kindersley's mayor on the recent announcement from Kindersley and Curl Saskatchewan. That's coming up next right here on the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
Kings of Saskatchewan Sports Talk. This is the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
And welcome back to a Tuesday edition of the Sports Cage, brought to you by Saskatchewan Lotteries. And looking forward to bringing you much more content here throughout the show. Big one that we got later on today, Jeremy O'Day going to join us at 4:30 on the Western Pizza Hotline. We're also going to have our first NASCAR report of the show. So we'll be bringing you that in hour two. Also, I forgot to mention off the top, Mike Thomas from the Regina Youth Flag Football League is going to be joining us to wrap up hour three to talk about the youth flag football system in Regina and area. Looking forward to that. First things first, really big news out of the provincial curling circuit, as Kindersley going to be hosting not just the Viterra Scotties, not just the Sastel Tankard, but both at the same time. Now, you may say, well, yeah, Melville did that and Estevan did that. No, this is different, because there will be Tankard Games going on at the same time as Scotty's Games on the same surface, right? They're still working on the draw, but I understand like it could be a scenario where you have two sheets of women's games, two sheets of men's games going at the same time. So that'll be something to really watch. As a big curling fan myself, I got to find a way to get up to Kindersley for that in January. Obviously, big news, big deal, and big enough that we had to get the mayor of Kindersley, Rod Perkins, to join us here on the show. And I chatted with him earlier on today, and here's what he had to say about this big announcement on the Western Pizza Hotline. Joining me on the Western Pizza Hotline here today is Kindersley Mayor Rod Perkins. Mr. Perkins, how you doing here today?
Pretty nice. It's sunny and getting warmer.
That's exactly it. You know, we're in springtime now, but today we're going to be talking about Saskatchewan's winter sport of choice, curling. Has to be pretty special to welcome both the provincial Scotties and the Tankard to Kindersley next year.
Absolutely was. We got notice probably 3 weeks ago, and it was very well received and certainly going to be a great time.
I was about to ask, what have you heard from the community on this announcement since the news broke?
I think maybe a little bit of surprise that both men's and ladies going on at the same time, and obviously will bring a lot of people to town and a lot of curlers as well.
Yes, this is the first time women's and men's events will be happening simultaneously in the same venue. Is it exciting knowing your community is going to be in the record books and offering a first for the sport in the province?
Absolutely. I think that it's we welcome opportunities to showcase our community, and I don't think anybody will be disappointed with what they have here. We've got, I think it's in excess of 700 hotel rooms here, so lots of room for people coming in. And we have, by that time, we will have 1,000 theater seats in our main arena, which will be where the men's event, I believe, will be going. I believe that the plans right now are to have the ladies event in the adjacent curling rink, which is just right adjacent to the arena. They're all under the same lobby, basically.
So what I've understood from Curl Sask is actually the men's and women's will be sharing the ice surface, so there'll be men's draws and women's draws on the same day in the same venue. Is that do you believe that to be the case as well, or no?
Yeah, well, I don't know how they're doing it as far as ice location, but I mean the two ice surfaces are 50 feet apart, so they're totally adjacent to one another.
For sure. It sounds as though you're fairly confident the West Central Event Center is going to be able to accommodate what could be double the athletes and potentially more than double the curling fans, thanks to this new setup. Is that the case?
Yeah, I'm not sure what they have for plans in the curling rink proper for seating. They do have a lobby area with some seats, but I think previously they've brought in portable grandstands in there and set up additional seating in the hockey rink that's going to be converted to a curling rink. There is, as I said, 1,000. It will be 1,000 theater style seats. Excellent viewing.
Has Kindersley hosted either of these events before? Remind me.
I'm not a curler, so I believe we have, yes, but I can't say for sure.
For sure. We've seen these events held in the same venue on separate dates before, but never at the exact same time. Did Kindersley maybe reach out to communities like Melville, who did it in 2020, or Estevan, that did this in 2023?
That I really don't know. I'm not particularly involved with the curling club other than knowing members on it, but I'm not sure how the bid process worked on that. So.
Do you feel this community is ready to host a double event like this?
Oh, absolutely. You've got to have the facilities, and totally confident we have that. We have the accommodations, many newer hotels that have been built here in the last 10 years. So there'll be absolutely no problem to host the people. And we have a goodly number of restaurants and stuff. So I don't think it'll be a problem whatsoever.
Is the hope that this could help attract bigger and better things for Kindersley when it comes to recreation?
We always hope that, for sure. Our tradition of hosting major athletic events goes back a long ways. We had 1984, we had the World Junior Baseball, and in was it 2013, I believe it was, we hosted the World Junior A Challenge in hockey, which had eight teams from, I believe, seven different countries here.
That's exciting stuff. Mayor Rod Perkins, curling, obviously a huge thing in Saskatchewan, but maybe just give us a sense of how big it is in Kindersley and area.
Well, I think curling has faced some challenges, and the local club has really worked hard to get its membership up, and I believe in the last couple of years they've been successful in that, where they can operate profitably, or at least break even wise, and provide a good deal of entertainment. So they had a bit of a lull, they've picked it up, and I think they're doing just fine now. And obviously, hosting this, I think, will be a plus for them in attracting membership even.
Awesome stuff. Mayor Rod Perkins from Kindersley, thank you so much here for the time today on the Sports Cage.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
That was Mayor Rod Perkins from Kindersley joining us on the Western Pizza Hotline to chat about a major curling event coming to Kindersley later on. And that was for Western Pizza, perfect pizza with a generous amount of toppings, plus Greek food like souvlaki, ribs, salads, all the goodness you can't make at home. Call Western Pizza today. Just major curling events coming up in Kindersley. And it's shaping up to be a pretty big year for curling in Saskatchewan in 2025. Of course, the World Men's coming to Moose Jaw in 2025 as well. So another big curling event coming up in what's turning out to be a calendar year of special events coming up here in Saskatchewan. Switching gears a little bit, we're going to be chatting some SJHL hockey a little later on. Benny Walchuk, of course, brings us a daily SJHL report. And we chatted with Lexi Adamson earlier on in hour one. She was well on her way to the Kindersley West Central Arena there to take in game three between the Flint Flon Bombers and Kindersley Clippers. Of course, Flint Flon has a 2-0 series lead in that series. But hey, them Kindersley Clippers fans are definitely going to be rooting on their home team tonight, and hopefully for them anyway, they can pull within a game in that series. But Flint Flon, hey, they're a pretty dangerous team. So looking forward to seeing the result in that one. Little earlier on in the night, 3:07 starts across the board. Estevan going to be hosting the Melfort Mustangs. Weyburn Red Wings entertaining the Humboldt Broncos. The Battlefords North Stars visiting the Melville Millionaires in that 4-5 series in the SJHL. So, again, lots of good hockey locally here. Western Hockey League, the playoffs don't start until Thursday. Saskatoon are going to be hosting Prince Albert in game one of that series on Thursday night. That's going to be the lone game for the WHL playoffs for that game. So we'll take a quick timeout here on the Sports Cage, break for news, and we'll be back with a whole lot more. Maybe just let us know on the Capital Ford Lincoln text line what you're thinking about the WHL playoffs. Who do you got coming out of the Eastern Conference? That's what I want to know. You can text us 306-936-6262. That's, of course, brought to you by Capital Ford Lincoln, Saskatchewan's number one Ford retailer, CapitalFordLincoln.com. Who is coming out of the WHL's Eastern Conference? Some good, good Saskatchewan teams out there. I think like the top three teams out of the East are in Saskatchewan with Saskatoon, Swift Current, and Moose Jaw. I got to be honest, I think my pick is Saskatoon. I know that's the easy one because they're the number one seed, but they're the number one seed for a reason. They are darn good. And so, again, looking forward to seeing the WHL playoffs progress. Of course, Regina's not in it this year. Maybe next year. Maybe next year. So yeah, we'll take that quick break now for the news right here on 620 CKRM. Time now for the sports ticker, which is brought to you by Sherwood Co-op. Sherwood Co-op will pump your fuel while you stay warm inside your car or just pay at the pump all winter long. Busy night in the NHL. 12 games in action. Some Canadian teams in action to tell you about here tonight. The Winnipeg Jets hosting the Edmonton Oilers. Connor Bedard, Chicago Blackhawks going to be hosting the Calgary Flames. The Toronto Maple Leafs are home to the New Jersey Devils this evening. The Montreal Canadiens will be visiting Colorado as they take on the Avalanche this evening. Western Hockey League, we already mentioned the Saskatoon Blades are going to be the first team in action against the Prince Albert Raiders in round one of the WHL playoffs. That series kicks off on Thursday night, so that'll be the first game of the WHL postseason. So keep in mind here, series that have already been set. Swift Current is going to be hosting the Lethbridge Hurricanes in round one. The Moose Jaw Warriors will be hosting the Brandon Wheat Kings in game one on Friday night. Both of those series get kicked off on Friday night. So that's basically it for Saskatchewan teams. And then, of course, Saskatoon will host game two on Friday night as well. SJHL hockey. Playoff time, game three is being played this evening. The Melfort Mustangs will visit the Estevan Bruins. Humboldt is in Weyburn this evening. The Melville Millionaires will host the Battleford's North Stars. All of those are 7 o'clock puck drops. The lone 7:30 start time is in Kindersley as the Clippers welcome the Flin Flon Bombers for game three of that series. All of those series are 2-game advantages for the top four teams in the league, actually. So the Battleford's North Stars, 2-0 lead over the Millionaires. The Broncos have a 2-0 lead on the Red Wings. And, of course, the Mustangs have that 2-0 lead over the Bruins. And the Bombers have that 2-0 lead that Lexi Adamson mentioned earlier on in the show. That is your sports ticker for Sherwood Co-op.
You're listening to the radio home of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
And welcome back to the Sports Cage here on 620 CKRM. I'm Ryan McNally taking you through the afternoon edition of the Sports Cage. It is brought to you by Saskatchewan Lotteries. Bringing communities together, Saskatchewan Lottery products fund over 12,000 sports, culture, and recreation groups across Saskatchewan. Speaking about Saskatchewan, no small town in Saskatchewan, or any town really in Saskatchewan, has won Kraft Hockeyville. And there's been many bids, right? Wilcox was the first one in 2008. Humboldt tried to get it in 2009. I know the Flesh tried to get it in 2018. My hometown of Lumsden tried to get it not too long ago either. We've come close. Even Pence, I think, was probably the closest one, actually. They had a really good bid. We've come close, but no cigar. The town of Wolseley's trying to change that, as they are in desperate need of a ice plant in Wolseley. So hopefully they can get that taken care of. So this week on the Sports Cage, we're going to be trying to highlight as many stories as we can from Wolseley to try and get you to vote as much as you physically possibly can for Wolseley. To not only end the drought, but also get Wolseley some much-needed funding, as ice plants, not cheap. They're like $600,000 to $800,000. This is the one quote I saw online. They already have $100,000 saved right now, which, okay, that's a start. But
just a down payment.
Just a, basically, yes, that's just a down payment. Colson Scholl's behind the board here for me. And today, folks, we'll hear from him a little later on in the show. But first things first, Wolseley just recently brought back their hockey program in the community. 2017 was the first year they brought back their Junior C program. And I spoke with the captain of that team, the Wolseley Mustangs, that won the 2017-2018 Junior C Championship in their inaugural season. And here's that conversation on the Western Pizza Hotline. Joining us on the Western Pizza Hotline today is Avery LePage. He captained the first Wolseley Mustangs Junior C team. Avery, how's it going here today?
Good. How are you, Ryan?
Doing all right. Avery, you and I go back a number of years. We'll get into that a little later on. But take us back to joining the Wolseley Mustangs before that 2017-18 season. What was that process like?
Yeah, so I was actually in Balcarres, playing for Balcarres, and their Junior C team was folding, and I thought my hockey career was done playing junior, just because as an overager, you have to play for the team the year before. But the league let me go to Wolseley as they were joining the league as a new team. My grandparents live currently in Wolseley and at the time in Wolseley, so it was a perfect match. And went to tryouts, had no clue if I was even going to make the team. They pulled me into a room and told me I was a captain, so I was a little surprised there.
For sure, and you know, they were a new team in the league at the time. What were crowds like during that first season?
Yeah, just the support of the community was insane. It didn't, like, the community treated it like it was an NHL program, and the guys running the team did the same thing, from coaches to the manager, everything. They just ran it as best as possible from the very start, and it showed up in the crowd. Like, to have 800 people at our final game against Regina, to having 400 to 500 people at a game during the regular season was just insane to me as a junior hockey player.
Did it almost feel like you were kind of getting that senior hockey preview in Junior C?
Yeah, you see senior hockey nowadays, the crowds, that's how our Junior C team crowds were.
That's insane. You end up getting to that league final. You're down 2-0 to the Regina River Rats before coming back and winning that series at home already 6 years ago this weekend. What do you remember from that final?
Yeah, I thought we were the better team. They had some very good players, very good team. Jerry being their coach, good coach. I just remember us, we never thought we were going to lose no matter what. So once we went down to, we never stopped believing in the team and in our own staff and everything like that. So going back to Wolseley, down to come out with a win, go to Regina, win in overtime, and then come back to Wolseley again for game five. And that's when we had a ton of people there to show the community. It was just insane. There was kids dressed up in Halloween costumes behind the goalie. Every single seat was filled in that rink. It was amazing.
From that season, would you say you still talk to or even play hockey with some of those guys from that team?
Yeah, I still see a few nowadays at the rink playing out safe. And then, yeah, I still talk to a couple that live out of town, actually. So still pretty close group for a Junior C team 6 years ago, which is awesome.
From that season, you met your soon-to-be wife as well. So you could say playing in Wolseley was worthwhile or worth the risk.
Yeah, that was bigger than the championship in then.
For sure. Do you feel Wolseley's a pretty good hockey town after your experience out there?
I just think they brought hockey back to that town. So there was a huge break between having the old senior team there and everything. So to bring back a junior team is pretty cool for the community. And they just like I said, brought hockey back to the town. It was starting to kind of die off, I thought, and to be able to win a championship there in our first year kind of put it on the map and built now, 6 years later, a junior C team that's still going. And there's a bunch of junior kids, and when I say junior, I mean anything from U7 to growing up there now. They have kids in that rink, which is amazing.
And good to see the rink full, too, for all levels of the game, too.
Yes, yeah, for sure.
For sure. And, you know, that Wolseley team now, even this year, is playing really good hockey and, you know, playing well in that Junior C League, too.
Yeah, Wolseley will always be a competitive team. I think the management there, they just pull from everywhere that they possibly can and make the best possible team, which is obviously makes people want to go there and fans come out to the game, too.
Of course, Wolseley is going for Kraft Hockeyville this year. I imagine you'll be voting for that community as often as you can this weekend.
Yeah, for sure. Everything I can do to help. I was only there playing for 1 year, but they made me kind of who I am today and helped me out so much. And if we can do anything for the community, to vote as much as possible this weekend, tell stories like mine, tell stories like kids growing up there who may be coaches now. And I had a coach actually there. His name was Mark. He's still a very special person to this day to me. And just something like that. Those are the kind of people that you want the community to win it for, and I hope we can get there.
The Saskatchewan town's never won Kraft Hockeyville. It sure sounds like folks from all over this province, including from past finalist communities like Lumsden, La Flèche, Humboldt even, will be supporting this bid by voting this week. And as someone who has spent a ton of time in hockey in Saskatchewan, how good is it to see that kind of support for this cause?
Yeah, I think if you can say what you want about Saskatchewan, but I think if you do know one thing, it's we support each other, especially when it comes to hockey. So to see that support come across the entire province and even some other provinces have been trying to get us in there, I think that's just amazing. And it shows what we can do as a team and not just individuals.
Avery LePage, the captain of that 2017-18 Wolseley Mustangs team that won the Junior C League back in 2018. Thank you so much for taking the time here to join us on the Sports Cage.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Ryan.
That was Avery LePage, the captain of the Wolseley Mustangs. He and I go back to high school. We've known each other probably since 2013. I knew he was a decent hockey player then, but to become a league champion in his final year, or maybe his final year, of Junior C eligibility, that was certainly special to watch from my perspective as a good friend of his. And glad to see that, you know, Wolseley still has a special place in his heart after, you know, that league title, which already 6 years ago. They played that final March 31st, 2018. And again, already 6 years ago. So a pandemic certainly makes time fly, doesn't it?
Yeah, it screws with your time. Line, that's for sure.
For sure. Ryan McNally and Colson Scholes here behind the board. Colson, as part of Kraft Hockeyville, you get an NHL preseason game out of this.
Yeah, I was just double checking the rules online, and it says, yeah, that it's an opportunity to host an NHL preseason game because it has to comply with the NHL and NHLPA requirements. And so if it doesn't, it'll be held in an alternate location. But even if we win, that means there's preseason game here in Saskatchewan.
Yeah, even if Wolseley wins, you could have it in Regina, for example.
Exactly.
Right? And, you know, maybe there's a way that, you know, Wolseley gets even more funding from that if they win, right? You know, the spinoff revenue of tickets to an NHL preseason game with proceeds going to the Wolseley Rec Board or whoever is doing the fundraising for this major investment, right? Like,
exactly.
It's a, again, $600,000 to $800,000. Not everyone has that lying around.
Nah. No, and the grand prize is still only $250,000, so they've got a way to raise still. So yeah, having the game, having proceeds from the game, it's definitely a good combination there.
What is the matchup you'd want to see if Wolseley hosted it, and maybe Regina had to host it, or even Wolseley gets to host it?
Yeah,
what would the matchup you want to be?
Well, I feel like you have to put a local Canadian team in, like Winnipeg, Calgary, Edmonton, one of those three. You got to get a close.
It'll likely be Edmonton. I think enough people would want Edmonton here,
and I don't know if they'd go for this, but I think it'd be really cool if you could get Chicago up here and get a good, like a Bedard trip home to Regina kind of a thing.
I feel like they could do it.
Yeah.
And I actually remember when Edmonton and Chicago played a preseason game in Saskatoon. Like, I was at that game.
That's true. Because
my stepdad's a huge Oilers fan, so we went and watched the Oilers in the preseason, right? And that was still when, like, Chicago had some really solid players, none of which really played that night. But it was still cool because you were watching NHL hockey, right, in Saskatchewan, which just kind of added to the mystique, for sure, of that event. And, yeah, I'd love to see a... I'd go and definitely watch the Blackhawks. I'm not not an Oiler fan. Not an Oiler fan. But, you know, hey, it's an opportunity to see NHL hockey in Saskatchewan. I wouldn't turn it down, that's for sure.
Yeah, and from... I work a lot with Dante DiCaria, Voice of the Pats,
because
I do the board operator for most of his games. But from the stories he's told, I know Bedard would love to come back. So he would be all in favor of that if that was ever floated by him.
I... personally would love to see a I don't know who I'd want. I definitely want Chicago. I'd maybe go Toronto Chicago just to get the original six matchup in Saskatchewan, because there's a ton of original six fans here. Right, I mean, like, you go down to Estevan, that is Boston Bruins country down in Estevan.
Yeah,
you know, Weyburn, a lot of Red Wings fans, both SJHL and NHL Red Wings fans. Melville, I know there's a ton of Leafs fans too, right? And it all dates back to, you know, the original six days where you'd pull players from specific franchises to play for the NHL team, right? And you know, like, the Regina Pats at one point were a feeder system for the Montreal Canadiens, right? So that's why there's a ton of Habs fans here, right?
Exactly. Like,
or a good reason why, right? And you know, it's it holds a little bit of tradition too, right? So I'd like to see a Leafs Blackhawks, or, you know, like an original six matchup of some kind here, which would be really cool.
It would be.
But definitely, like, Blackhawks would be like the number one, just for the Bedard.
Yeah.
And then yes, you'd have your local team. So I would definitely, you know, take the original six team and a localized team, which is what you proposed. But that's definitely something that we could look forward to. Maybe we're like three steps ahead of the cart here. We got to win the darn thing first, right? Let us know what you think here on the Capital Ford Lincoln text line. What two teams would you want to see in a preseason game here in Saskatchewan? 936-6262, the number to text. Give us those two names, those two teams that you'd love to see in a preseason game here in Saskatchewan. Even if we don't get Kraft Hockeyville for Wolseley, maybe it's something we look at in the fall, right? Because I know Regina's had numerous preseason games, right? Mm-hmm. I remember one in particular was the Senators and the Ottawa Senators and Tampa Bay Lightning. And I was at that game too, and that was pretty cool as well. I know, like, some people were really upset that, like, the star guys for both teams were kind of out, but, like, they still had, like, some guys that, like, you knew that were in the lineup too.
And it's right? it's a preseason
game. It is a preseason game. Like, right? Are they going to play every single preseason game?
No.
No.
No. They're going to get them in, get them warm, make sure they are getting into the motions, right? So that getting back, knocking the rust off. That's the phrase I'm looking for. And yeah, you're not going to have your number one guy playing his usual 15, 20 minutes of hockey that he's going to play during the regular season.
Exactly. And yes, if they're in a suit in the press box, they're still here. They're just not watching them play.
Yeah.
Right? Which I guess is, you know, the kind of the point, right? If you want to go to an NHL preseason game, you want to see, you know, NHL players, right? And for the most part, I think both of the games I went to, there was NHL players there. None that I remember. Like, Jonathan Toews didn't play in that game in Saskatoon between Chicago and Edmonton. You know, Steven Stamkos, I don't think, was on the Lightning roster that night. But, you know, there were still NHL players playing in a preseason game in Saskatchewan, right? And bonafide NHL players at that, too, right? Like, no slouches by any means. Like, they cracked the roster, and, you know, you saw them on Hockey Night in Canada.
Exactly. They earned the right to be there. They're still players. It's just not the mega stars that were hoping to see, and that are the big names in hockey.
Exactly. We'll take a quick time out and be back with more here on the Sports Cage right here on 620 CKRM.
Nobody covers your team like our team. This is the Sports Cage on the Mighty 620 CKRM.
And welcome back to the Sports Cage on a Tuesday afternoon for Saskatchewan Lotteries. Bringing communities together, Saskatchewan Lottery products fund over 12,000 sports, culture, and recreation groups across Saskatchewan. Already a couple of texts here on the Capital Ford Lincoln text line. Our question today, who would you want to see in an NHL preseason game in Saskatchewan? We have Garth from Wawota. I agree with Garth. Personally, he says Toronto versus it doesn't matter. I've never heard of the it doesn't matters, but I'm here for it, right? Toronto will probably blow a 3-goal lead to that. I say that lovingly as a Leafs fan. I say that lovingly. We also have a unnamed texter. Hopefully they can text us their name at some point so we can give them some love. They want a good old-fashioned rivalry from the early 2010s, the Vancouver Canucks and Chicago Blackhawks, with a 100 emoji. I would go see a Canucks Blackhawks matchup here for sure. That'd be pretty cool,
especially with these Canucks.
Yes. I mean, there's really no gaps in that roster. So you're getting a really good NHL player coming to play here in Saskatchewan if that is the case. Still to come here a little later on this hour is Benny Walchuk's SJHL report. He does that for us every single day right here on the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM. It is SJHL playoff time, of course. The four games in action tonight, all game threes being played tonight. All game fours being played tomorrow night. Fairly easy to draw up a schedule that way for the SJHL. Just play back-to-back, and then you're back for the weekend for game five if necessary. So let's roll that SJHL report if we could. For Benny Walchuk's SJHL report here on 620 CKRM.
It's time for the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League report on the Sports Cage. I'm Benny Walchuk. After a couple of nights off, the SJHL playoffs will resume tonight with four quarterfinals playing their game number threes. First up at Affinity Place in Estevan, the Estevan Bruins, who dropped a couple of tough outings in Melford, will host the second-seeded Melford Mustangs tonight. Game time will be at 7 o'clock from the Energy City. While just up Highway number 39, the Weyburn Red Wings will entertain the third-seeded Humble Broncos for game number three of their series. The Red Wings fell at both games at Elgar Peterson Arena in Humboldt, including a 7-4 decision on Saturday in game number two. On the west side of the province, the top-ranked Flin Flon Bombers will try to take a 3-game-to-none series lead. They'll take on the Kindersley Clippers, who are hosting their first playoff game in almost 5 years. While the Malva Millionaires are back on home ice as they host their first playoff game since 2018, as the Money Men host the Battle for North Stars from the CN Community Center in a battle of the tightest series so far in the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League playoffs. Puck drop from the Rail City tonight will be at 7 p.m. Meanwhile, there's two commitments to announce from the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League yesterday, as two Notre Dame Hounds have announced they'll advance their hockey careers at the collegiate level. Davis Sato and Roxanne Bird, who spent their entire 3-year careers with the Hounds, have committed to the Vancouver Island University of the BC Intercollegiate Hockey League for next season. Sato is a product of Richmond, BC, and he had 39 points in 108 games with the Hounds between 2021 and 2024. While Bird, a coach in Saskatchewan product, played in 107 career regular season games with the Hounds and contributed 23 points. And don't forget to vote for the 2023-24 SJHL's RBC Community Ambassador Award. The four finalists are Malford Mustangs defenseman Leith Olison, LaRonge Ice Wolves forward Jacob Cassettes, Estevan Bruins captain Keegan Little, and Flin Flon Bombers forward Joey Lees are all up for the Community Ambassador Award. There's 19 days left to vote. You can vote for that at www.sjhl.ca. With the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League report on the Sports Cage, I'm Benny Walchuk.
Thank you to the busiest guy in the SJHL, Benny Walchuk, for that SJHL report here on the Sports Cage. Should also mention to vote for Woolsey for Kraft Hockeyville. Voting opens.
I just moved off of it. 9 a.m. this Friday. There we go.
9 a.m. this Friday. Yeah. And
closes 5 p.m. on Saturday.
So be a super voter and just like... sit at your computer screen from 9 a.m. Friday to 5 p.m. Saturday is what you're going to need to do to get Woolsey over the hump. And hopefully we'll see that come to fruition here for Woolsey. You find out on Hockey Night in Canada that night, I'm pretty sure, is when the results will be final.
It says winner announcement on March 30th.
Yes.
That's all we know.
Perfect. Maya from Woolsey. Thanks for texting in. She texted in the Canucks Blackhawks answer earlier on. Blake from Woolsey said, bring back Bedard, bring back Eberle. So obviously he's wanting to see a Chicago Blackhawks game versus, well, I guess it'd be Seattle Kraken, right? Because Eberle signed that deal earlier this year to stay with the Kraken for a little bit longer. I like that answer, actually. That might replace my original six answer. I'd like to see a couple of former Pats back at it.
That'd be really nice, yeah. That's the two ways you got to swing it. It's original six or a couple of Pat greats coming back home.
For sure. Or even the regional one. That's not a bad option either, right?
We'll call that plan C.
There's options. There's options if the town of Woolsey ends up winning Kraft Hockeyville. Hopefully they do. I know I'll be voting as much as physically possible over the Good Friday and Saturday Easter weekend. Time to break for news here on the Sports Cage on a Tuesday for Saskatchewan Lotteries right here on 620 CKRM.
Welcome inside the Radio Octagon. This is Saskatchewan's number one sports talk show, the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
Thank you for joining us, Saskatchewan, on your Tuesday afternoon. Ryan McNally and Colson Schultz taking you through an afternoon on the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM. It is brought to you by Saskatchewan Lotteries, bringing communities together. Saskatchewan Lottery products fund over 12,000 sports, culture, and recreation groups across Saskatchewan. Busy day in sports. We heard earlier from Kindersley as the both Sastel Tankard and Viterra Scotty is coming to Kindersley next year in January of 2025. We also heard a little bit about Kraft Hockeyville, the Woolsey bid, and looking forward to doing that, voting as much as we can this weekend for the Kraft Hockeyville bid that Woolsey has put together. And we head now back out to the Western Pizza Hotline to chat with Sportsnet's Arash Madani. We're going to be chatting a little bit of baseball here. Arash, first off, where are we catching you here today?
I'm back home. I was just in Dallas over the weekend. Canada didn't screw it up. They have qualified for the Copa America. They'll be playing in that tournament for the first time ever. And back home now, so getting ready for baseball and everything else.
So the air miles are looking pretty healthy, I'd say, Arash, after a trip to Dallas. Yes.
Absolutely.
This Blue Jays team, this is it. Spring training over now after yesterday. It really went fast for the Jays, didn't it?
It just felt like spring training went really fast across baseball this year. And I don't know if it was because the Ohtani thing took up so much of the oxygen in the room or what, but you know, these 5 weeks absolutely flew.
Yeah, absolutely. You'd say most eyes this season are going to be on Vlad Jr. In what you believe, I think, or possibly anybody could believe, is a put-up-or-shut-up year for Guerrero Jr. Right out of the gate, Blue Jays manager John Schneider believes he's putting Guerrero in a position to succeed in the lineup. Do you agree with what John Schneider's thinking here?
Yeah, I mean, look, you want to get Guerrero at-bats. You want to get Guerrero as many at-bats as possible. You want to take a little bit of the heat off of Bo Bichette. And, you know, Vlad only hit in the two-hole twice all of last year. And what was really interesting is, I think he told Rob Longley of the Toronto Summit, he said, I'm comfortable hitting anywhere in the lineup. It just feels like it's a different version of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. this year. You know, he's doing TV interviews now in English. He's a lot more comfortable in his skin. He's got three kids. He's 25. He's 2 years away from free agency. He's 6 years into his big league career. You know, like it's a more grown up lad. And so I think by putting him in the two hole, because of where he's coming from a mindset standpoint, can only help this Toronto offense.
Are there Any other real changes or surprises you see in this lineup?
Not really. I guess Justin Turner batting cleanup out of the gate is a little bit of a eyebrow raiser. But then again, if it's not going to be Guerrero, who else bats cleanup for you in this lineup when you look at it? Like maybe Alejandro Kirk? But the fact that you have a 39-year-old now journeyman, Justin Turner, batting cleanup may actually speak to how uneventful and unimpressive their offseason was.
Is that kind of, though, a telltale sign of you put all your chips on the table for one and the gamble doesn't pay off, though, with the Otani?
I don't know about that. Like, I think on the surface, that's what it looks like. But the Shohei Otani $700 million or so offer, whatever that was as much a business move as it was a baseball move. I know this sounds crazy, but 10 years at $70 million per, that deal would have paid for itself because of all the outside business interests you would get. This is what I mean by this. When Hyunjin Ryu came here back in, what was that, 2019, 2020, something like that.
I think you're right, yeah, 2019.
Ryu signed 4 years, $80 million. 10 of his $20 million, a South Korean TV station paid for the rights to all 162 Blue Jay games so they could air all of Ryu's start. So when you bring in Otani, not only are you going to get Japanese TV money and overseas TV money, but you would have had something like the official soya sauce of the Blue Jays, the official sake of the Blue Jays. You would have had so many more sponsorship opportunities that, to me, that was as much a business move as a baseball move. I think in their heart of hearts, the Blue Jays knew that they had a very low chance of landing Otani. But it wasn't all or nothing. Look, there remain players available to go get since. They just didn't go get them. You know, Blake Snell only signed last week. Jordan Montgomery's still out there. On and on we could go. So that's kind of, I don't think it was Otani or bust. I think it was Otani's going to help us do everything we need to do.
The Blue Jays get their regular season started in Tampa Bay. We're on the opening day roster. No Kevin Gausman, no Jordan Romano, no Eric Swanson. These are vets to the pitching staff. They hope to get back soon. Any cause for concern here?
I don't think so, because it sounds like, you know, Gausman was terrific yesterday. He got his pitch count into the 50s. He was just a little behind with the shoulder. You're coming off a Cy Young finalist season. He's in the prime of his career. I think Gausman's going to post up when they need him to after this first couple of weeks. As long as Romano and Swanson don't suffer setbacks, you know, your seventh, eighth, ninth inning guys are going to be fine. You know, I think we talk about this stuff a little bit more just because it's the start of the season. If all this was happening in the middle of June, we'd be like, all right, well, they'll be back in a couple of weeks, no big deal. So I think that's kind of where that stands.
The Jays made the playoffs in 2020, just missed in 21, got back there in 22, and again in 23, but no postseason wins to show for it in that time frame. What do expectations have to be this season?
Well, way more than that. You know, and I thought Mark Shapiro made an interesting point. He thought that the quote-unquote playing meaningful baseball in September was going to be enough for this fan base, and it's just not. So unless this team makes a run in October, it almost feels like, you know, this entire regular season comes down to how 2 or 3 weeks in October is going to go. Because if they bomb out in the playoffs, one and done, or if they don't make the playoffs, you have to think that this, you know, a shoe's going to fall somewhere. And at some point, Ross Atkins, the GM, is going to have to answer for this because, you know, he's been in the seat since 2016 and nothing's really happened. They've done the rebuild and it's worked, except nothing else. So it's a it's a real make or break season, it feels, for this team, especially with Guerrero and Bichette, you know, a year and a half away from free agency.
And historically speaking, Arash, this is the hardest division in baseball, too. So to have a make or break season when Tampa Bay is good, Baltimore good and on the rise, the Yankees are, you know, the Yankees, right? They sometimes just find a way,
but
right?
I think the Yankees is just a reputation thing. When's the last time the Yankees did anything?
Well, they made the playoffs not that long ago. And, I mean, right. they have the money to spend, too, right? So.
Yeah, no, but I'm not buying the Yankees. I'm not buying the Red Sox. That's the irony right now in the AL East. The AL East right now is being dominated by Baltimore, Tampa, and Toronto. You know, the Red Sox have not been a factor for almost four seasons now. The Yankees really haven't been a team you're worried about for a couple of years now. Gerrit Cole, who knows when, you know, that's a Cy Young Award winner. Who knows when they're going to get him back? When they start talking about elbow damage, that's scary stuff. So, to me, it's here for the taking if you're the Toronto Blue Jays. And they've had opportunities to add. They just added the wrong guys at the deadline, and that's got to change if they're going to be in the hunt, you know, in July, August, when it's time to make a deal with the trade deadline.
Sportsnet's Arash Madani joining us for Coast to Coast for Smart Investing Solutions. Be smart with your money. Call Brian Gawley at Smart Investing Solutions, 546-2533. Arash, we did kind of touch on this, but is the front office for the Jays as all in as expectations seem to be?
It's a good question, and I don't know the answer to it. Because look at what they did this offseason. They added Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, Justin Turner, and not much else. You know, a veteran Cuban pitcher. I think that they truly believe, they're so caught up in their own BS, that they truly believe what they were doing and what they're doing is going to work, and that internally the players they have is good enough, so we don't need to go upgrade because these guys are going to be better. So I guess you'll, because of that mindset, I guess you'll find out if they're all in around the trade deadline, because when it really is going to matter in terms of upgrading, then what are you going to do? So, you know, for now, they believe this is a team that can contend and, you know, get 27 outs every night and win ball games. Do they think this is the way it's built now can go win in October? They can't. They really can't. But, you know, it's a weird one because it's there for the taking, but they got to upgrade the roster, and they spent the entire offseason without really upgrading the roster.
Blue Jays had hoped to land Shohei Ohtani, as we mentioned earlier today, Arash. They didn't get him. Now this week, Ohtani and now Jonte Porter have both found themselves in gambling controversies, although it seems Porter, who plays for the Raptors, is in a much different boat than Ohtani is right now.
Yeah, well, the Ohtani thing's interesting because it's about the translator, and who knows if he's involved. You know, Jonte Porter is in a really interesting one because a ton of prop bets came in on him end of January. The Raptors were playing the Clippers. And then again in, last week or something like that against Sacramento. And DraftKings, one of these sports books, had record numbers of under Jonte Porter props. And then this dude takes himself out of games after 3 or 4 minutes because of apparent eye injuries or an illness. And, you know, when his props are around 7.5 points, 5.5 rebounds, whether or not he's going to hit a three, and then he leaves the game, that's where, you know, bets were made 10, 20 grand on Jonte Porter unders. That just doesn't happen. Usually, player prop bets, even at the high level, are around $1,000 or $2,000. So something's up here. What it exactly is, it's hard to know. But this feels altogether different than the Ohtani situation.
And obviously the Ohtani situation is, you know, you got some tinfoil hats online too that still seem to believe that Shohei is behind this all. But do you believe it? Like, I personally want to take Shohei's side, but where are you standing on it?
Where I'm standing on it is Major League Baseball is going to do its very best to try and make it look like they're doing a above board investigation, knowing full well that nobody comes close to being their meal ticket more than Shohei Ohtani. So whatever unfolds, unless there's a smoking gun somewhere, I get the sense that this is going to be a total sham, quote unquote, investigation, and they're going to do their best to make sure the show goes on, pardon the pun. I mean, guys, think about how this conversation started. A $700 million contract, almost all of it could pay off on its own because of business interests outside of the game. There is a lot at stake here for the institution of baseball if there's impropriety around Shohei Ohtani. So I think they're going to go out of their way to say this was one rogue official to try and discredit his former translator and friend and take it from there, because baseball already is in enough trouble from a business standpoint. They can't afford this.
And on that note, gambling, right, has become such a big part of sports across the board. It just seems inevitable there's going to be more of this, isn't there?
I think so. I think so, and I think, like, if you don't believe that, you're just being naive. I mean, there is no separation between church and state anymore. Every broadcast you watch is brought to you by gambling. Every venue you look at has gambling sponsors all over the place. Every social media post has a gambling partner. Everybody's making money off of this. And, you know, what did you think was going to happen? Like, you know, it's funny. I've been following all these NFL rule changes, the kickoff and everything else. And I always ask, what are the unintended consequences of decisions that get made? And everybody was so excited to make all the money off of gambling, they didn't think about some of the unintended consequences. And here we are, which is why they're in the mess that they're in right now.
It's like one of my favorite movies, Arash, Jurassic Park. You worried about whether or not you could. You didn't stop to think whether or not you should. And I think that's kind of a prime example of this. I still remember, I believe it was Shane Pinto got busted for, you know, his phone being used for gambling in the Ottawa Senators facilities. And, you know, the social media graphics all flying around when he got suspended for 41 games. And every outlet was guilty of it, using a picture of Shane Pinto.
Shane Pinto doesn't matter. Calvin Ridley in football doesn't matter. Jontay Porter doesn't matter in basketball. There is no athlete in the sport of baseball who is more important to its league and its game than Shohei Ohtani. If this was his former teammate, Anthony Rendon, nobody would care. If this was Santiago Espinal, nobody would care. It'd be a headline. It'd be a conversation point for a day. They'd make that player the example, and they'd move on. They can't do that with Ohtani because Ohtani's more important than any player in the league, and it's not even close. So that's where the big difference is.
That's true. I still remember that Bet99 logo on the top of the helmet of Shane Pinto when he got busted for gambling. Arash, always never enough time. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Sports Cage here on a Tuesday. And I think Brendan McGuire will be chatting with you on Thursday.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much. Arash Madani joining us on the Western Pizza Hotline. Perfect pizza with a generous amount of toppings, plus Greek food like souvlaki, ribs, salads, all the goodness you can't make at home. Call Western Pizza today. And of course, he joins us every Tuesday and Thursday for Smart Investing Solutions. Be smart with your money. Call Brian Gulley at Smart Investing Solutions, 546-2533. Before we hit pause for news time, we made an error, Colson.
Yeah,
we goofed up.
I made a rookie mistake. The times we listed earlier for Kraft Hockeyville are Eastern times.
Yes.
So the correct times for us here in Saskatchewan, voting starts at 7 a.m. this Friday and closes at 3 p.m. on Saturday.
So you got to set the alarm just a touch earlier.
Yeah.
To start voting for Wolseley on Friday morning. So again, 7 a.m. Friday morning is when you can start voting for Wolseley.
Yep.
Don't stop until 3 o'clock Saturday afternoon. That's correct. Your punishment now, Colson, for giving us the wrong times. That's my fault, too.
There goes my stat.
All righty. Well, time now for news on the Sports Cage right here on 620 CKRM. Now for the Sports Ticker, which is brought to you by Bronco Plumbing and Heating, where professional service is guaranteed. They'll treat you right. 781-2090. We got some hockey to talk about here. In this Sports Ticker. But first things first, we have breaking news. Saskatchewan skip Skylar Ackerman is stepping away from competitive curling to pursue further education in the healthcare field. So, yeah, definitely big news here in Saskatchewan. She finished with a 4-4 record at the Scotties Tournament of Hearts in Calgary. Her first as a skip. She was an alternate for Robin Silvernagle the year before. There's a bunch of different curling announcements over the last, I'd say, week or so here, including Jean-Michel Menard is coming back to competitive curling out of Quebec. He won the Tim Hortons Brier in 2006 here in Regina. And yeah, just a bunch of different news tidbits that hopefully we hit a little later on in the show here today. In the NHL here tonight, one all-Canadian matchup sees the Winnipeg Jets host the Edmonton Oilers. The Toronto Maple Leafs are home to the New Jersey Devils. Calgary Flames visit Connor Bedard and the Chicago Blackhawks. And the Montreal Canadiens will visit the Colorado Avalanche. That's just some of the 12 games on the NHL schedule tonight. WHL playoffs get started on Thursday. Saskatoon hosts Prince Albert for game one of that series. That'll be the lone game of the WHL playoffs for that night. Friday night is when things really get going. Swift Current is going to host Lethbridge. Moose Jaw will take on Brandon in game one. And then, of course, game ones throughout the rest of the WHL as well. SJHL playoffs, game threes tonight. Melfort visiting Estevan, Humboldt in Weyburn. Melville, yes, hosting the Battlefords. And the late one at 7:30, Kindersley going to take on Flin Flon in game three of that series. All of those series are 2-0 in advantage to the visitors tonight. That is your Sports Ticker, brought to you by Bronco Plumbing and Heating.
It's time to step into the radio octagon. You're tuned to the Sports Cage on Saskatchewan Sports Radio, 620 CKRM.
Joining us on the Western Pizza Hotline is Riders General Manager Jeremy O'Day. J.O., how's it going here today?
I'm great. How about you?
Doing all right. I wanted to ask about the CFL Combine, Jeremy, which wrapped up on Sunday. What did you or the Rider Scouts see at that Combine?
Well, just an opportunity for us to see the draft prospects in person. So it usually starts off with some testing that they'll do. So basically a lot of measurements of their height, weight, and you know, the length of their arms, and then from there it goes into some testing, which includes, you know, the bench press and the vertical jump and the broad jump, and then eventually we leads us into interviews where we interview all the candidates, all the prospects, and then eventually kind of a change in the last 2 years is they actually started to do some practices with the prospects, so we can actually see them go out and do individual and then some teamwork, one-on-ones and stuff like that. And so it's a pretty thorough evaluation time for us, and just a really great opportunity for us to see the guys in person, so you can you know, get a look at them live versus just watching them on tape.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how beneficial is the combine to see what prospects can do from a physical standpoint in person?
Well, it's very beneficial. You know, we want to make sure that they have, you know, the physical abilities to be a professional football player, and some of that comes through watching them test and, you know, see if they fit kind of the criteria of being a pro, and but it also allows us an opportunity to compare them with the other top guys that are in their position. So, yeah, just great opportunity both to see how they do physically, but then also to interview them and see how they are mentally and how they, you know, react to different questions that you'd ask.
And the combine, relatively new to the CFL. The NFL has been doing it for ages, but maybe speak to the way this showcases the Canadian talent ahead of the draft coming up.
Well, it's been around for a while, as long as I can remember. But it's you know, again, it's just their kind of an early picture of the players, and you know, they do it about a month before our draft, and you know, allows us some time to go back and reevaluate the players that we've kind of already evaluated going in, and you kind of go through and you know, compare your grades to what you had on them before the combine, and you know, some of the players can move up and down from how well they perform, and yeah, just an opportunity to see them in person.
Did you have a draft combine when you were playing, J.O.?
Yeah, so I was actually drafted in the supplementary draft, so I actually didn't go to the combine, but it was still going when I first came into the league, and it's kind of progressed. You know, I think there's been a progression and some changes that they made to it. What's unique about ours is they actually will go out and wear pads and compete in one-on-ones, and then now they've added some practices. That's something that's different from the NFL. The NFL just goes and tests the guys, you know, physically, and they'll do the interview process there at their combine. But ours is kind of unique because they actually go out and practice.
So how do you feel you would do if you had to do a combine as a player?
Right now?
Well, even back then.
I think I would have done pretty well in the combine. I would have had some experience from when I was coming out of college. I was getting recruited by NFL teams, so I actually had to do some testing for them. And I think I would have done pretty good. But I will say that the athletes today, they seem to be getting bigger and faster and stronger. So these guys are really prepared. And this group that was here this year was a really good group. They tested well, and it's a good draft class.
Riders General Manager Jeremy O'Day joining us on the Western Pizza Hotline. Perfect pizza with a generous amount of toppings, plus Greek food like souvlaki, ribs, salads, all the goodness you can't make at home. Call Western Pizza today. J.O., switching gears, this has been some kind of offseason here for the Riders. What do you like most about the pieces you've brought in?
Well, obviously we made some big changes to the coaching staff and hiring Corey, and you know, I like the fact that we've had a lot of time together since he's been hired, and going through this combine together with the new coaching staff has been great. And then I thought we had a strong free agency with you know, getting some pieces that we want to improve on and making some changes to our roster. And so you know, the off season's off to a good start. We still got the draft in front of us, and we'll still make some, you know, some tweaks to our roster going into the training camp. But overall, we feel good about where we're at. But also, you know, knowing that it's a lot of work is done in the off season, but you know, the big test is when we get to the season and winning football games.
Do you feel on the player roster side that you've addressed the gaps this team had in 2023?
I think so. I think, you know, some of the areas that we targeted certain positions going into free agency, and we wanted to, you know, improve a little bit to the offensive line, in particular tackle position. So we addressed that with Jamarcus Hardrick, and you know, we added a little bit more of a power runner with AJ Olet, and then added some good veteran guys on defense that will fill the void with Larry Dean retiring, and we feel like the guys that are coming in that position and also on the defensive line are experienced veteran guys that they'll have really good leadership qualities. And so, yeah, we're excited. We're excited to get to training camp and start building the bond between the new players and the current players, and then also establish a new culture with the coaching staff. I think that's going to be something that's key in training camp. There'll be a different voice to the team, and hopefully guys respond great. It's been really positive the last number of weeks, and we're just looking to carry that momentum on.
As a former offensive lineman yourself, it had to be pretty good to beef up that old line coming into this year.
Jamarcus is someone that's been a good player in the league for a number of years, and it's a position that we wanted to improve at, and he brings a lot to the table on the field and also in the locker room. He's a energetic guy that will bring a certain attitude to the group, and we feel like we've got some good ones in the room, but he's only going to add to that. So we have to be strong up front. It's something that we haven't been overly good at in the last number of years, and we certainly need to be better. And we're happy with the start to 2024.
What are some of the pieces that you're looking to add in the draft coming up here to help fill some of those spots?
Yeah, so the draft, obviously a lot of evaluation goes into it, evaluating your roster and the Canadians that you have on your roster. I think when you look at it, you've got to be honest with where you're at as far as the Canadians, and if you need to prove in a certain area. I'm not one that would tell you exactly what we'll be targeting into the draft. I don't know if that would be any very beneficial for us to share our philosophy. Certainly after the draft, we'll share that. But, we look at every position and, where are we starting Canadians? Where are we attacking the ratio? And, where are we going to get those seven starters from? And so, that's what we evaluate and, with the new coach and staff to make sure that, we've got the guys in the right position and those ratio breaking guys, but then also, later in the draft, they're trying to get some guys that can come and compete on special teams and provide depth to the Canadian positions that we're using. So, sorry, that didn't give you much information, but we're looking at every avenue to improve our team and certainly look to the draft to help with that.
Hey, that's a veteran answer. I can't be mad about that, J.O. And again, you've been doing this for quite some time now. How do you feel this draft class ranks?
Well, I'd say it's a strong one. I don't know how many years back it would go, but for me, it feels like it's one of the stronger draft classes we've had in the last 5 or 6 years. And just think that there's more top-end guys, and because of that, there'll be more rounds of quality players, and not to say that there hasn't been quality players in the last number of drafts, but I just think that this is just a little bit deeper draft than we've seen in the last number of years.
Maybe just walk us through the decision process when it comes to drafting in the CFL. Normally, you'd think you would take the best player available to fill the need you have, but obviously with the CFL draft, there's of course multiple factors, right? Including the NFL draft, NFL free agency, that sort of thing. So just walk us through that process.
Yeah, it's a great question. So it's a little bit unique because there's the NFL draft that happens, prior to our draft, which is actually a good thing because then it allows us to know whether the player was signed, whether he was drafted or whether he signed as a free agent or maybe if he's just going to a mini camp. So depending on how the players do, the top end players that are going to be potential NFL candidates, depending on where they get drafted or signed, that will affect your draft board. And then it will also just effect on when you would consider drafting someone. So if somebody is a high NFL draft pick, obviously that's going to lower them in the CFL draft. So it's something that you have to consider. There's a little bit of risk and reward in that. If you take a higher risk, and then the possibility of a bigger reward, and vice versa. If you could take a risk on taking a player high, and you may never see him again because he goes and has a career in the NFL. So it's something that you have to balance, and you have to kind of have an idea. You know, do you need your picks to come right away, or can you wait a little while and be patient? And sometimes those work out, and sometimes they don't. So it's it's really just about trying to find as much information you can on the player, and again, we kind of get an idea of where they're going, or if they were drafted, or if they were signed as a free agent prior to ours, which makes it a little bit easier. So, it's all just depends on the philosophy on whether you want a guy that's going to be guaranteed coming to training camp day one, or if you're okay with waiting for a little while.
So it is truly wild to me that you could be too good to get drafted in the CFL, in theory.
Well, it's if you see a guy that's drafted really high in the NFL, then we always say the higher that you go in the NFL draft, the lower you go in the CFL draft. And so in some cases that's true, in some cases not. But usually that will scare a CFL team off because you're not sure you're ever going to get that player. But that doesn't mean that they won't get drafted in our league. It just usually just kind of moves them down a little bit.
This is now the second head coach you've worked with in Corey Mace. What have you noticed that he brings differently when it comes to the players he wants to bring in for this team?
I think it's just, different coaches. Just they have different players in mind. I don't think it's anything that's very different than any other team if you had two different head coaches. But you have you're going from a special teams head coach that has a background in special teams to a coach that was his specialty was on defense. And so I think it's just personal preference on the type of players that you like. And it's still done the similar way where we'll sit down together, and was done the same way with Coach Dickinson, where we actually would sit down and go through the potential players or free agents or draft picks and evaluate them all, and then strategize to what we're trying to do as far as how we're going to improve our team, and ultimately it leads to more wins on the field. And so they both are very good coaches. They have a little bit different personalities, which everyone does have different personalities, but it's been good. It's been a lot of fun working with Coach Mace. He brings energy, and is a guy that the players certainly like to play for, and excited to work with him and also our new coaching staff.
Question I got to ask here, J.O., how is Trevor Harris heading into the season?
He's good. Yeah, he was good. I've talked to him a couple weeks ago, and at that time he was feeling good, and he's back doing everything that he's done prior to the injury. So I think he's going to be talking here in the next couple days to the media and giving an update, but he's by all accounts he's excited for the season. He's someone that keeps in regular contact with us with what's going on with the team and the roster, and yeah, we're just excited for him to get back healthy and to get back on the field.
I imagine he's pretty excited about the free agency ads this year.
Yeah, Trevor was was very involved, and when I say that, he's always willing to lend a hand to call possible sign, free agents that we're trying to sign. And so he just does a great job in that the tampering window of calling the players and really just giving them the information. He's someone that just he came from other teams. Last year was his first year here, so he's got a kind of a unique experience of coming to the Riders, and he's just been awesome. He was like that last year, and he was the same this year, where he's always willing to call guys and help us recruit them. And he was just excited. AJ and him live in the same state, and I think they've gotten together, or they had planned on getting together. So I imagine they did. And he's just been in regular contact with the new free agents that we're bringing in.
It's a question Rider fans seem to ask every single year, but how do you feel the quarterback situation is for this team?
Well, we think that Trevor's a very good quarterback. He's obviously played in the league for a long time and been successful and played at a high level. And we feel strongly with Trevor as our starting quarterback. And I think that, one of the things that's important is that we also develop a quarterback for the future. And so, you know, Trevor's only going to be able to play for so long. And, you know, it's our job to, to make sure that we have the next quarterback that's ready to go. And that's something that's always ongoing. And I know how popular the second quarterback in Saskatchewan always is, but it is something that we're focused on, and understanding that we have to have a quarterback that's going to be the next guy after Trevor's done.
Well, yeah, you saw that as a player too, with Marcus Crandall, Darian Durant, Michael Bishop there for a bit too. So you have no shortage of knowledge when it comes to the backup QB in Saskatchewan. General Manager for the Saskatchewan Roughriders, Jeremy O'Day, thank you so much for the time here today.
No problem. Appreciate you having me on.
Our house is your house. Welcome inside the Sports Cage on Saskatchewan Sports Radio, 620 CKRM.
Capital Ford Lincoln text line, which of course brought to you by Saskatchewan's number one Ford retailer, Capital Ford Lincoln. Take a look around capitalfordlincoln.com. Got a couple texts that are coming in here. Obviously the goof up we had earlier on in the show with the time zones and whatnot, time change kind of may have gotten to us a little bit here in Saskatchewan. Oh, wait, just kidding. That doesn't happen here. Just everywhere else. 7 a.m. on Friday, you can start voting for Wolseley as Kraft Hockeyville. You can do that right up until 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. But another one I got to during that interview that I had with Jeremy O'Day that, by the way, happened on the Western Pizza Hotline. Perfect pizza with a generous amount of toppings, plus Greek food like souvlaki, ribs, salads, all the goodness you can't make at home. Call Western Pizza today. Eli texts in, says he's not sure what J.O. means when he says players like to play for him and that they haven't played a game yet. Well, Corey Mace was the defensive coordinator for the Toronto Argonauts in 2022 and 2023, and the Argos were pretty good in that time frame, right? They won a Grey Cup here in this city in 2022. That defense, let's be honest, won them that Grey Cup. That was an unreal defense they put together.
Nothing like back-to-back blocked field goals. I don't know what you're talking about.
Exactly, right? And then, last year's team was really good, but, that Montreal Alouettes team seemed to be on a mission on their own, right? And their defense did not lose them that Eastern Conference final.
No. They still played lights out. It was just not enough to overcome that terrible showing.
Yes. They just, could not put it together for a full 60 minutes. And unfortunately, that leads to Montreal getting to the Grey Cup. But then Montreal cashes in and wins that Grey Cup 2 over Winnipeg, which is something we all love to see here in Saskatchewan. So Corey Mace coming to Saskatchewan as the head coach and defensive coordinator. Looking forward to seeing what he puts together for the Riders. Hopefully it's better than 6-12, but we'll see. Something we're going to start doing here on the Sports Cage on a week-to-week basis on Tuesdays is giving you something called the NASCAR Report. And it's a bit of an update on what's going on in the world of NASCAR. Here it is, the first NASCAR Report on 620 CKRM's The Sports Cage. With this week's Rubbin is Racing report on NASCAR, I'm Ryan McNally. Hendrick Motorsports has a lot to be happy about as the team barrels toward its big 40th anniversary celebration in 2 weeks. William Byron dominated on Sunday in his second win of the NASCAR season, which came at the Circuit of Americas. That's quite a role ahead of the team's planned celebrations for race weekend at Martinsville Speedway, where Hendrick Motorsports claimed its first win with Jeff Bodine in 1984 when it raced under the name All-Star Racing. The racing so far has produced its own party. Brian is only the two-time winner through the first six races of the season. He spoke after the race about how it all went down.
I feel like I made a lot of mistakes in the last 10 laps, just little micro errors, and Christopher was really fast there on the longer run. But this sport is just so hard. It is so difficult to, you know, week in and week out, show up and have fast cars. And we've had a little bit of a rough stretch the last few weeks, but just put a lot of prep work in this week, and just thankful for the team I have around me, all the people back home as well. Joanne, who helps me, and Ken, who is here today, Max. So all those guys play an integral role in preparing.
Brian also spoke about his pit crew being the fastest of the week, which truly gave him an advantage.
Yeah, I just feel like when we're on, we're firing on all cylinders, whether it's pit road, strategy, calls on top of the pit box for changes in the car. So just thanks to everybody on this team. There's not enough people that get credit, but this is really cool, and like I said, we prepared really well this week, and it's just difficult, man. You just got to keep working.
Alex Bowman earned his third top four finish of 2024 at the COTA, finishing fourth behind Brian and also Toyota drivers Christopher Bell and Ty Gibbs. Meanwhile, Kyle Larson snatched a Wild Xfinity Series win on Saturday, passing Shane Van Gisbergen and Austin Hill on the final lap in double overtime. Van Gisbergen looked to be in control and heading to his first career Xfinity win ahead of this season debut in the Cup Series on Sunday, but two caution flags forced two overtimes. Hill passed him with a bump in the first corner on the second restart. Lurking behind him was Larson, the Cup Series leader, who saw his opening for the race lead halfway through the final lap and passed both cars. Van Gisbergen crossed the line second, but was hit with a 30-second time penalty for cutting the corners on the track section of S-curves on the final lap that dropped him to 28th. Coming up next weekend is the Toyota Owners 400 in Richmond, Virginia. That is today's NASCAR report. I'm Ryan McNally.
Welcome inside the Radio Octagon. This is Saskatchewan's number one sports talk show, The Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
And welcome back to the Sports Cage here on 620 CKRM. Ryan McNally and Colson Schultz taking you through the afternoon sports chatter, which is taking place here today. If you missed any part of our show, we'll be posting the podcast on 620ckrm.com and the wide variety of podcast listening options we have at our disposal here too. So if you're missing any part of the show here today, feel free to tune into our podcast a little later on this evening. That said, let's head out to the Western Pizza Hotline to chat with the one, the only Glenn Suter. Glenn, how's it going here today?
It's going well. I really enjoyed the J.O. interview earlier in the show, and he had some great insight on the draft coming up and some other things that the team is working on, you know, as we speak. There is no off season in football, really, not for management for sure, and not coaches and players either, really. I mean, it's a 24/7 career now. In the old days, it was an off season, but not anymore.
For sure, right? And, you know, we chatted about, you know, the draft and, you know, how a Canadian getting drafted in the NFL doesn't eliminate them from the CFL draft, but it certainly hurts them, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a weird dynamic, and I thought it was an interesting aspect of that interview with J.O. that, you know, when a player that is Canadian or would have Canadian status in the Canadian Football League is drafted in the NFL, he immediately drops in the CFL draft to a lower draft pick. Well, the reason for that is sheer numbers, that you want, if you have, you know, seven draft picks and three of them are signed in the NFL, you're bringing four new potential players into your potential, you know, eventually starters. That's why you draft them into your team instead of seven. That just changes the sheer numbers of, and the competition in your training camp. So that's the balancing act that general managers and coaches have to work with. But what the interesting dynamic to me on it, though, is that there is as much politics involved with that as there is talent. I mean, a Canadian player being drafted in the NFL lowers his draft pick, really has very little to do with his talent being that much better than anyone else in the draft. It has to do more with the fact that the higher that a player goes in the NFL draft, the more money that will be invested in him means the longer the team will hold on to him. And that actually circumvents the whole talent argument, because now you're basically saying, well, because we paid him a lot and we drafted him in the third round, not the eighth round, we're going to pay him a lot and we're going to keep him in training camp for at least 2 years. Now, he might not be good enough to make the starting lineup and he might not ever be good enough, but they're going to hold on to him. And that's where the politics comes in. And that's why it's more of a gamble for CFL teams to draft a guy that's already been drafted in the NFL.
Absolutely. And, you know, like, there's also the sense that, like, yeah, you can draft him, but no sense that you may never see that player for other reasons too, right? I mean, be it an NFL opportunity, maybe they just, you know, end up in another pro league south of the border too, right? And, you know, we've seen it a little bit. You know, I remember Onyemata got drafted by the Riders, I believe, in 2016 or 2017. And he's never come north of the border, right? He's only stayed south. So it's definitely more risky proposition to draft in the CFL for sure.
Yeah, I know it happens. And that's why it's ideal that the NFL draft goes first now. It wasn't like that in the past. And I can't remember how many years ago that changed, but to have the draft, you know, so that GMs understand and know, you know, really what they're dealing with. And then there will still be those gambles, as J.O. talked about. I mean, there'll still be the kid that maybe didn't get drafted, but all indications are he will sign with an NFL team. And if you draft him, you may be waiting a year or two. You know, I mean, Nathan Rourke kind of falls into that category. He ended up coming here because he wasn't drafted. You know, and now he's not playing, and yet he's waiting. But, you know, I think what's most important here is to emphasize that the draft is a very, you know, hit and miss proposition. It is not, you know, just because they're first round picks, that means they're way better players than the third or fourth or fifth round pick. And I think sometimes, you know, in football, especially in Canada, teams get caught up into the hockey mindset of drafts. They start to think, well, it's kind of like if you take the best player, if you take Connor Bedard, you change your team. That's really not the case in football. There's too many guys on the field. They all have different jobs, all have to do their job well for you to be successful. Now, the quarterback is obviously maybe a bit of an exception, but it still flies against that rule that when you got five guys on the ice or five guys on the basketball court and you pick one of those generational talents that come up in the draft every 5 or 8 years, you can change your team, the trajectory of your team and the future of it with that one pick. Very different in football. And I think we sometimes get caught in that mentality that, you know, my first round picks have to be the best players. The NFL certainly does it all the time. And then they get to camp and they're not. The walk-on sometimes is a better player than the first round pick. We've seen first round busts over and over again. And one of the best players all time in the NFL was Tom Brady, who went, what, in the sixth round of the draft. So this is a very unexact science when you think about, you know, picking players and the difference between a Pro Bowler or a CFL All-Star and a guy who doesn't make it is tiny, like razor thin.
Glenn Suter joining us here. Thanks to Quality Tire with 9 locations across Saskatchewan, qualitytire.ca. Suits, last year's Grey Cup won the Sports Tourism Prestige Award. What does that mean for the CFL?
Well, it just is the recognition that, you know, it still is one of the best Canadian parties of the year. You know, I think 4 or 5 categories in those Tourism Canada awards. So it's a prestigious award in that it's in the category where the budget is over $1 million for this particular sporting event. So only events that are the big ones in our country are the ones that would be, you know, nominated or up for this award. And the Grey Cup in Hamilton won. And, you know, and I think when you look at just the sheer numbers of $75 million in economic impact, $21 million coming from outside the greater Toronto-Hamilton area and being injected into that community, you know, the 200,000 people that attended events throughout the 6 or 7 days, 33,000 of those came from out of province. So, you know, I think we sometimes kind of breeze by those great stats when we talk about the Grey Cup party. I mean, it still is a fantastic celebration that brings Canadians together almost like no other event we can. I think the next one coming up that will probably, you know, take it to even another level, because sometimes an international event, you know, is going to bring that much more, you know, that much more sort of fanfare to it. And when World Cup comes in a couple of years, you know, to the big cities in Canada, you know, you're going to see that probably those numbers multiply. However, the Grey Cup is a price tag to set it up and run it. A Grey Cup festival is a lot different than a World Cup festival that we're going to see in Vancouver and Toronto and, you know, in the big cities to see the World Cup games. And, you know, I don't know what, I think they're over a couple of weeks or something like that. I can't remember, but, you know, we're talking $500 million and it sounds like it's still going up. I think that in British Columbia, they're still not even telling people how much the World Cup's going to cost. So for an affordable number in the big picture, the Grey Cup is still a great party and affordable for cities, and yet still brings great economic impact and brings people together.
Could you imagine another Olympics too? Like, that'd be like those events, like the World Cup, Olympics, you know, those are big price tag events. And, you know, yeah, they're a great party. And I personally remember the 2010 Olympics near and dear because I was there. But they come at a pretty cost, right? Whereas the Grey Cup, a little more manageable, right? And to be able to get an event like that to win such a prestigious award, as you mentioned, got to be a pretty good feeling for the CFL, because again, it shows again the league's punching above its weight, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that there's such great upside potential, affordable price for great entertainment, and you're going to have a great time. I mean, how many young people right now are always searching for the next party? I know I was when I was one of the young guys. And when you're doing that, here's one that'll drop right in your city. And that's why it's important for teams to bid on it. That's why it's important for cities from the government, you know, whether it's municipal, provincial, whichever, or both, that they get behind these things. And, you know, and I'm for the big international events too, like the Olympics and things. There's so many sort of spin-offs and things that sometimes we don't appreciate enough, like just putting your country on display for the rest of the world in an Olympics. You know, how much does that really, over the next 10 years from that event, create tourism dollars? You know, I mean, it's hard to add all that up, but it certainly is there. And but there is a fine line, right? I mean, you talked about it, and the World Cup, I'm very suspicious that the British Columbia provincial government is not telling citizens here in Vancouver or around the province how much the World Cup is actually going to cost.
I'd say that's pretty concerning.
Yes.
Yeah. Glenn, obviously some CFL news today. Bo Baldwin joining the Calgary coaching staff as a quarterback's coach has a pretty great resume you were mentioning earlier on here today in our chats.
Yeah. This is a great hire. I don't know how many times I have told the story of Bo Baldwin, who is like the quarterback guru. I mean, he is a guy that spent most of his college coaching career at Eastern Washington University. In fact, was a five-time Big Sky Conference champion, and. You know, when he has worked with, here's the resume of guys. Bo Levi Mitchell was at Eastern Washington, Matt Nichols as well, Vernon Adams here in Vancouver, who has also worked at college under Bo Baldwin, and Michael Riley. And, you know, those are our quarterbacks that have had great success in the CFL. So, you know, to bring a guy in with the resume that he has, the championship pedigree, He's in that Big Sky Conference where, you know, we get a lot of players. You know, we get a lot of guys that are sometimes overlooked by the NFL, but certainly have the talent to play in either league. And we get them because they played in the Big Sky Conference and they're not in the big Div 1 schools that the NFL draft really focuses on. So, you know, guys like Adam Big Hill were guys that played in the Big Sky Conference. And so, Bo Baldwin has worked with the best, and I tell the story all the time, and I tell about him working with all those different quarterbacks that have had great CFL success, and think of Bo Levi Mitchell and his championships and championship appearances. But I read an article where it said in the article, and I can't remember who wrote it, so I can't give him credit, but it said that he was asked of the quarterbacks in the CFL. It was probably three down nation, actually. But in the quarterbacks and the three downs that played three down football, Michael Riley, Vernon Adams, Matt Nichols, and Bo Levi Mitchell, who was the best in your mind? Who do you think he picked?
I would say Bo Levi.
Yeah, well, that would be the natural thought because of the success that Bo has had. But he said Vernon Adams. Now, you know, I'm not sure of the context of the question, and maybe he was talking about upside pro potential or a guy that in our game with all the movement and motion and the ability of a quarterback to use his legs as well as his arm, you know, that could have been part of the context of the question, but he said Vernon Adams. So Vernon Adams is still a starting quarterback in our league right now, and so is Bo, for that matter. But, you know, I just... Great to have him as he's in Calgary, but great to have him in our league because he understands what the quarterback position needs to do to be successful. But he does it in our league too. Sometimes there's a real transition period, sometimes 3-4 years, as a matter of fact, for a coach from the States to come up and really figure out the nuance. It seems to me that Bo Baldwin knows the nuance already.
Suits, time is always of the enemy. But before we let you go, Colson has one question for you here.
Sure.
Hey, Suits. Just wanted to pick your brain with the NFL changing their kickoff rules to match more what the XFL looked like. What are your thoughts on that and what the CFL is kind of debating with changing their rules as well?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a hot topic right now because the special teams in our league and in the CFL is so much more prominent than it is in the NFL. And what they're trying to do, and they've showed actual numbers, is to lower the number of injuries that they have found that there's been an uncomfortable trend upwards in injuries in the kickoff cover team, even though with the NFL kickoff, you rarely ever see kick returns. And this is another reason they want to make the change. So what they're going to do is they're going to move the cover team right down close into the returning team's half of the field. And they'll only be 5 yards apart. And you have to have 9 guys of your 11 in the NFL right on that line of scrimmage. And the kicker's way back and the returner's way back in their own end zone or on the 1 yard line or inside the 5. And then there's less chance of the big time collision. And there are some guys in the CFL that would like to change our rules to have automatic, eliminate kickoffs after field goals, and you get the choice now in field goals as a return team, but you don't when it comes to the touchdown. And they want to eliminate some of the kickoffs when you score a touchdown that you could take the ball at the 40. I don't like that idea, but if they want to move the cover team closer to the return team and they do start to actually show us what the stats are, because maybe there's not more injuries on the special teams in our league. I don't know. But, you know, I know there's some coaches and GMs that are pushing for a player under the player safety umbrella to eliminate some of the kickoffs or change the rules so there's not as big a run for the cover team. I'm not opposed to looking at the you know, the XFL idea where you're closer and you don't get that long 30-yard run before you make contact. I don't want to eliminate any of them, though. We've got too many great returners in our game, and it's too much fun to watch them to have even one less kickoff cover, kickoff return. And it'll have a trickle-down effect, too, guys. I know we got to go, but it'll have a trickle-down effect where if we don't have the returners that in the final 3 minutes of a game can, after going down by four with a minute and 20 to go, and they take the return on the kickoff back past midfield, then there's another score. It may affect scoring if we don't be careful with it. So I think they're talking about it, but we'll see. I'm not sure there'll be a change this coming season.
Absolutely. Glenn Suter with press coverage for Quality Tire with 9 locations across Saskatchewan, qualitytire.ca. Glenn, Brendan McGuire is going to have you on Thursday. Hope that's all right, and we'll get you a lot more topics then, I promise. So thank you again so much for the time.
No problem. No. It was a good talk, and I enjoyed the JO interview. Awesome. Have a good one.
Thank you so much, Glenn Suter, joining us on the Western Pizza Hotline. Perfect pizza with a generous amount of toppings, plus Greek food like souvlaki, ribs, salads, all the goodness you can't make at home. Call Western Pizza today. And thank you for joining us on the Tuesday edition of the Sports Cage for Saskatchewan Lotteries. Time for news here on The Cage on 620 CKRM. Time now for the sports sticker, which is brought to you by Busy Bee Overhead Doors. Busy Bee will repair or replace your residential or commercial garage door so you don't get stuck in or out. Catch the buzz. Busy Bee Doors, the garage door specialists. Few games in the NHL to speak about tonight. Canadian teams in action include the Edmonton Oilers visiting the Winnipeg Jets. Toronto Maple Leafs are home to the New Jersey Devils. The Calgary Flames visit Connor Bedard and the Chicago Blackhawks. The Montreal Canadiens visit the Colorado Avalanche. Western Hockey League playoffs kick off Thursday night when Prince Albert visits Saskatoon to get the playoffs started. Game ones in the rest of the Western Hockey League take place on Friday as Swift Current will take on Lethbridge, and Moose Jaw will host Brandon, the Wheat Kings, in game ones in those series. Some curling news to tell you about as well. Skylar Ackerman stepping away from competitive curling. The 22-year-old Saskatchewan skip made her first Scotties Tournament of Hearts appearance in February in Calgary, finished with a 4-4 record. She, of course, was a spare on the Robin Silvernagel rink in 2023 as well. The team announced it on their social media page as well. And before we let you go here on the sports sticker, of course, there's SJHL action to tell you about tonight. Game threes in all of these series. Estevan leading that series against the Melfort Mustangs, or rather, no, Melfort leading that series 2-0. They're in Estevan to take on the Bruins. Humboldt Broncos up 2-0 on the Weyburn Red Wings. They play in Weyburn tonight. The Balfour's North Stars also up 2-0 in that series. They play in Melville this evening. The Kindersley Clippers down 2-0 in their series to the Flin Flon Bombers. They host the Game 3 this evening against Flin Flon. That is your sports ticker for Busy Bee Overhead Doors.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Sports Cage. Now back to the action on Sports Radio 620 CKRM.
And if you missed any part of the show, The Sports Cage podcast will be up on that Facebook and Twitter pages, I guess, a little later on in the little later on this evening, so you can tune into the podcast. We've had a busy show here, and we're about to wrap it up here in hour three. We chatted a little bit about Kraft Hockeyville, the Wolseley bid. We chatted about Kindersley getting not just the Sastel Tankard, but the Viterra Scotties Tournament of Hearts, both in January of 2025 at the same time, at the same place. That's exciting. Looking forward to that as well. Sportsnet's Arash Madani joined us as well a little later on for Smart Investing Solutions to chat some Blue Jays. Didn't quite get to basketball chatter that we wanted to get to, but unfortunately that'll have to be saved for another time. And also talk to Riders general manager Jeremy O'Day, so lots of stuff there to listen back to see if we can get you informed on the sports news of the day. Our last guest for the show here this evening, from the Regina Youth Flag Football League, Mike Thomas joins us. And Mike, I have to ask, the NFL going a little bit in a different direction with tackling, so it's getting a little closer to the sport that you're in charge of. Are you excited about that?
You know what? It's interesting that the NFL decided to make that choice for a rule change. It is different, although the NFLPA was against it, but at the same time, they do look at player safety, and there were some significant injuries that did occur from it. And there were some inferences from some players that perhaps it is time to really just give players some flags and let them go. So you can tell that flag football is definitely on the minds of the professionals, and so that bodes well for the sport and for getting that on the minds of people here as the weather starts to change in our own province.
Of course, and if people don't know or change or they're looking at their radio saying, Ryan, what the hell are you talking about? Of course, NFL banning hip drop tackles today. So tackling Derrick Henry got even harder today for safeties and defensive backs for sure. But enough about that. It's almost Regina Youth Flag football season, isn't it? And that's got to be pretty exciting for you, Mike.
Yeah, most definitely, Ryan. You know, like, we're super excited as we get ready for our 18th season, and we keep eclipsing numbers that we posted the previous year, and this season, upcoming season, we look to have over 3,300 boys and girls playing flag here in the city from surrounding communities, including Regina. And so, you know, as we sit here and have the sun kind of beating down on us, we're excited as we get ready to get rolling, as we start to get more emails from parents asking questions about stuff because their kids are excited, or those that might have missed the boat trying to see if they can get on with a life raft. But unfortunately, with the way things are, that isn't the case. But super excited to get things rolling this season, and thankful to be able to come on air and talk about it.
So is registration already open for youth flag football?
I would say the opposite. It's already closed. We opened registration on January 8th, and it was quite a day. We basically filled almost all 3,300 and some spots on that day. You know, the popularity of the program is such that really it is something that is, you know, we're super proud to have being the largest program in the country. And knowing that we've got the greatest volunteers, men and women, coaches, to be able to help this next generation of boys and girls play the sport, it's super exciting. And we wish we could get some more coaches, as that's definitely our biggest issue that we've got right now as we're getting ready to prepare, as we're starting to look and potentially be short in a couple of those areas.
So looking for more coaches, but back to registration too. I guess what's the biggest contributor to, you know, maybe accepting more kids into this program? Is it, you know, just field availability, or is it volunteer coaches?
It's a combination of both. You know, the one thing that we have to remember is that we do share fields with a lot of other user groups here in the city of Regina. And as much as we would like to stake claim to some spaces, we also play nicely with others. You know, so we do share the space with the rugby community. We do share some fields with the soccer community. So, you know, we all try to equally have access to spaces, and we don't want to over dominate one group or another. So realistically speaking, it comes down to time. But even with that, it still does come down to coaches, because when we look in some areas, it does show a deficiency of volunteers. So then we're not able to offer as much. So, you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, there are some that want to play but are unable to due to not enough volunteers in this space. However, you know, we have to be able to handle the capacity that we can, and we don't want to have a situation where, you know, we bring in people and tell them, well, sorry, we don't have a coach, you can't play. We want to try to work within what we know, but then also potentially stretch those limits and then, you know, hopefully only have to look for a couple of coaches, you know, near the end. So we're very fortunate to have some great volunteers and coaches who are looked up to them by, you know, players from the Regina Thunder and the U of R Rams, and you know, for some that are able to from the Regina Riot as well, from the women's tackle team. So, you know, we're very lucky to have those young men and women volunteer to be a part of the program, but also the mums and dads, aunts and uncles, brothers and sisters and cousins that help volunteer as well.
Mike Thomas from the Regina Youth Flag Football League joining us here on the Western Pizza Hotline. Perfect pizza with a generous amount of toppings, plus Greek food like souvlaki, ribs, salads, all the goodness you can't make at home. Call Western Pizza today. Mike, how many teams are there in Regina, and how many age groups?
Yeah, you know what? we're almost approaching 300 teams that are a part of our league. And so it does take us a long time to, you know, manage those team compositions properly, because, you know, we have to be diligent in how we do things. We do try to group them appropriately and stuff. But it is a daunting task nonetheless. I think we're at 296 or 292 to be precise. And that's running over six different age groups. So, you know, it's awesome, because we've got, you know, programs for kids as little as 4 or 5 and to as old as 16, 17. And, you know, the one program that we're super excited about this upcoming season is actually a program in collaboration with Speech and Language Builders here in Regina with their Social Connections program, which is for children who have some social skills difficulties that they try to incorporate their in sessions with some football to get them to learn how to be able to communicate a little bit better and to enhance their social skills. So that's one that we're super excited about. And we also saw a new initiative with Unified Football that we're going to be looking to get ourselves into with potentially with the Special Olympics group. So super exciting times, some awesome developments, and really looking forward to things here for the 24 season.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty cool to see an organization like yourself, you know, getting out there in the community and, like, you know, really getting those partnerships together, right? You know, not just putting together a league and, you know, hoping it works, but also, like, getting involved to get even more people involved as well throughout the community.
Yeah, it's super exciting, you know, to have people look at the chances that we're trying to give and be open and receptive to that. The community has been a great supporter with many local businesses providing their hard-earned dollars to help us just even do more programs. So that's the thing that we really, really are super proud about, is how the community in Regina and area just love to support local initiatives. So we're super thankful for all of the businesses that are part of our organization.
Alrighty, Mike, I got a kid on the way due in May. When they're old enough, sell me on flag football. Why do I gotta put my kid in flag football?
Well, I don't have to sell you on it, because I think just coming and being a part of the action is enough in itself. If you ask anyone that's had an opportunity to be involved, we let them be our spokespeople, because for what we're able to do, I think it's one that offers an opportunity for kids to play the sport and learn from a grassroots aspect, and such that they don't have to get right into, you know, thinking that football is just tackle. There's ways to develop their skills and then move on to playing tackle at another point in time. And if so, great. And if not, they're able to play the sport, as we call it, football for life, from start to finish. And so, you know, I think that with that, that would be something that we would look to sell to any parent that's out there. And of course, it's great fun. It's affordable. It's organized very well. And I think people have enjoyed being a part of it over the years.
And also, I mean, I'm seeing the pictures on your website here. Get a chance to represent an NFL team in a way too, right? That's got to be pretty cool for the kids too, to, you know, get to back a team early and play for a team early, right?
Absolutely. You know, we're very fortunate that through this partnership with NFL Flag, we do have access to all 32 NFL properties. But with that being said, I also want to make note that our biggest supporter is actually the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, because for them, they look at this as an opportunity to build football fans. And yes, they do have a lion or a bear or a panther on their jersey. But at the same time, the Riders are great supporters of the program, knowing that they're able to help the community learn about the sport, enjoy the sport, and in turn, if they're interested, to come to be a part of their fan experience. So, you know, it's great that we have the NFL backing, but, you know, I also want to make note that the Riders are huge proponents of what we're able to do in the community as well.
And you also mentioned, too, the U of R Rams helping out, Regina Riot help out where they can, too, right? So this is really a full football community production, really, for Regina's Youth Flag Football League.
Yeah, we're definitely, reliant upon the support of other football people, as mentioned, with the Rams and the Thunder and the Regina Riot. And also the U of R women's flag football team, they've also been huge in for us in terms of being the coaches for our all-girl teams that are out there. So, you know, we have a lot of young men and women who are being leaders in the community, and the football aspect is such that, you know, everybody's had someone in their lives that has coached them, whether it was when they were younger or, you know, teenager, or even, you know, when they're in the pros. And so it had to start somewhere. So that's the thing that we've really embraced with those groups, is that, you know, at some point in time, someone gave volunteered their time to help them get to where they are. And so we asked them to be able to do that for the boys and girls here in the city and surrounding communities. And it's been one that's been well received by those teams. And so, you know, I definitely have to thank, Coach McCauley, Coach McConkey, Coach Hasbeck, Coach Wachinski for allowing their players to come and be a part of things. But more importantly, stressing the importance of giving back into the community as well.
Mike, where does Regina's Youth Flag Football League go from here? Obviously, we talked about the participation numbers as high as they are. Coaches in need of coaches, of course, and, you know, field, you know, availability. But where does the league go from here?
You know, I think the way that we go from here is just looking to help expand in other locations, so that you don't have to just, you know, be from Regina or from, you know, somewhere that's within a driving distance to be able to have it in their location. It's to help spread the love and spread the game across the province. So, you know, we've been very fortunate to help other locations be able to get started with an NFL program, such as Swift Current and Saskatoon. North Battleford had a little opportunity there as well. Moose Jaw has another league too. So, you know, it'd be great to be able to have many different pockets across the province for people to be able to enjoy the game. And so that's what we look at in terms of expansion, or we look at different opportunities. And especially with the LA Olympics in 2028, our goal is hopefully to have, one or two players or coaches from Saskatchewan and hopefully from Regina be a part of the first ever Canadian national team to represent Canada at that game. So, you know, we definitely have some high hopes and expectations, and hopefully, we're able to sustain those goals and keep setting the bar high to have that opportunity to be a part of the LA Olympics in 28.
How big are those LA Olympics for this sport too, right? Because I'm not saying there wasn't a future in flag football before, but there really is now.
Yeah, you know, it really has changed the discussion at the table, really, even nationally. It was pretty heavily dominated by tackle football conversations, and flag was in there, and it just wasn't on the same level. Now with the announcement that has occurred, it has now really put an accelerant on that fire and has really ignited some deep conversations nationally in regards to what we need to do or how we need to move forward. And for our own sake, for what we are thinking about as a league, is it's given us an opportunity to think big picture, think bigger, think more, think how different ways and how we can help have young boys and girls think about the sport as not just a secondary sport, but as a primary sport. So, you know, there's great opportunity with this, but also with great opportunity comes great responsibility. So, you know, it's something that we look at, how do we target the specific groups appropriately, and how do we maintain and grow and build on what we've established currently? So it's definitely one that we're excited about, as the future is definitely bright in the sport.
Registration already closed, but when do games start this spring?
First slate of games will actually happen for all the major part of everyone will be May 11th at the University of Regina and the Regina Rugby Club field. And our older kids, which are a competitive group, they actually start 1 week earlier, starting on May 3rd. So once things start getting rolling in May, baseball diamonds are flowing, soccer pitches are rolling, and football fields will be full and bountiful with flag football players out there as well. So it's hopefully going to be really good. Obviously, our winter was not that heavy, so the snow is melted, and we've seen some kids outside throwing the football around already. So I know that there's a lot of excitement, and we can't wait for the opening days for us in looks like about 5 weeks, so it's going to be exciting.
Yeah, it's not that far away, and I know a bunch of kids are getting ready to hit the field as soon as they can. Mike Thomas from the Regina Youth Flag Football League, thank you so much again for the time here today.
Hey, much appreciated, Ryan. Thanks for having me, and have yourself a happy Easter.
You as well. Mike Thomas, again, joining us on the Western Pizza Hotline. Perfect pizza with a generous amount of toppings, plus Greek food like souvlaki, ribs, salads, all the goodness you can't make at home. Call Western Pizza today. We'll take a quick time out and be back with more here on the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
The Kings of Saskatchewan Sports Talk. This is the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
We're wrapping up Hour 3 here on the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM. If you missed any segment of our show, you can tune into the podcast. It's going to be available on 620ckrm.com and also wherever you find your podcasts of choice. It's been a good show here today. Not quite done yet. We have one more thing we got to do. We got to crown a Sports Cage Clutch Performer for Nick's Service in Emerald Park, your local Massey Ferguson Challenger, Rogator, Gleaner, and Fendt dealer. You can call 781-1077. And here's my pick for Clutch Performer of the Day. I'm giving it to the Arizona Coyotes. Not very often we give Arizona Coyotes love here in Saskatchewan, considering they're in a desert and they play in front of less fans than the Regina Pats did this year. But they gave us another Doan era in the desert, as Josh Doan, Shane Doan's son, will make his debut for the Arizona Coyotes tonight, wearing number 91. So if there was ever a reason to watch the Arizona Coyotes, I think tonight might be the night to do it. So, that is our clutch performer for Nick's Service in Emerald Park. Your local Massey Ferguson Challenger, Rogator, Gleaner, and Fendt dealer. Call 781-1077. It's the dawn of a new era in Arizona. That's my clutch performer of the day. I'll also give you guys all clutch performers of the day, too. My listeners for today's Sports Cage, it's been a fun one. Lots of good texts, and keep them coming, too. Hey, If Wolseley is able to pull this thing off and win Kraft Hockeyville, who's the two teams you'd love to see in a preseason game here in Saskatchewan? We've had a lot of good picks. A lot of people are loving our pick of the Chicago Blackhawks to see Connor Bedard again.
Yeah, that's so, the one that seems to make the most sense. The other team seems to be what's up for contention.
Exactly, right? And some people are saying, hey, you know, I want to see my team, and I don't care who they play against. But, I'd like to see Chicago again. And, again, I'm a Leafs fan. I'd see Chicago versus anybody, really. So I like that idea with the Eberle versus Bedard here in Regina. That'd be cool too. Well, that's going to do it for our show here today. We'll pick it up again tomorrow right here on the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM. See y'all tomorrow.
Today's Sports Cage has come to a close. Miss a segment? Download or stream the podcast now at sportscage.ca. Get your sports straight from the source. 620 CKRM.